'Tis the season. Pour yourself a tall, frosty glass of Haterade, because it is Badger Hate Week here on Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush with you. Phil, you are in the holiday spirit.
I am very much in the holiday spirit. Badgers suck.
They do, and we're going to get to that later in the show as we talk about Marquette's, not next game, but their next game after San Jose State. Not
that really matters.
Not that we're looking past San Jose State, but we are totally looking past San Jose State as we look ahead to Saturday's matchup with the Wisconsin Badgers. We're going to talk about that in today's show, and we're going to look back at the last couple of games that, you know, maybe not a whole lot to break down when you're playing statistically two of the worst teams in college basketball, but we'll kind of go through those anyway. And Phil, we're going to do it kind of in a different way, in that we took some scrambled questions from the message boards, and so we're going to basically kind of take those questions as we kind of pick out what we want to talk about from those games. But before we get to that, what did you think from the blowout wins over Grambling and Maine?
I thought overall, obviously it was positive because they were blowout wins and they were wins, but those are games that at least historically have felt like we've always struggled to really dominate in both games. And Wojo even said it in his post-game conference yesterday after the game, getting my days mixed up,
as we record it on Sunday,
Wojo said the starting team got out and really did all the right things at the beginning, and in the first 4 or 5 minutes really jumped out and set the tone. And they did that the last couple of games, which I think is very encouraging, because you should play at a high level at all times regardless of the competition. So I think that shows a real difference of attitude and capability than we saw in the first couple of games. So I think that's a positive note.
Yeah, I think you and I kind of chatted about this on Twitter. Maybe it's because I just don't really log by games into my limited memory as I get older, but you know, I'm not gonna say, oh, remember that one time we beat Grambling, you know, 100-75? That was a great game. I don't remember that. I just don't log those games. But again, the general feeling is a lot of those games in the past, maybe this is selective memory here, just seemed like they were closer than they should have been for a long time. And that goes way back several years, really, not just last year. But it was refreshing to see Marquette play two totally overmatched opponents and just blow them out of the water. And the one thing I took away with, it's just nice to have a little depth this year, so much so that including the walk-ons, you can put a team out there in the last, you know, 2 to 4 minutes of the game with some walk-ons, and you don't have to have your starters out there just to field five guys, you know, because that was the case last year, where if a game was out of hand one way or the other, Marquette still had to have like one of their starters out there.
Right, and the game yesterday, we had two walk-ons and Sakar, I think Sandy was out there, and I don't remember who
I think the closing lineup is Camerata, and then Maki, and Helt in the middle, Sakar, and Wally Ellenson.
Yeah, well, yeah. And
that's your closing lineup, and I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, and they were competitive with the, you know, you're going to the bottom of the bench, no offense to anyone that was playing, but you're going to the non-primary players, and they're competitive with a Division I school. That's good depth to have long-term. I'm not saying any of them is going to supplant, you know, one of the main players this year, but it's good depth to have and good depth to develop.
And it's good to have those guys to go up against in practice.
Yes.
You know, because that's who the starters are going up against in practice. But yeah, it's nice to have some competent guys on the bench. Again, not that we necessarily expect, you know, the walk-ons to be stars or anything, but it's just nice to have guys like that on the roster. And I said this on Twitter during the Grambling game. I think it's fun when you have that lineup in a game that's out of hand, because, A, it's safe for your star players because they're not out there. It's fun for the fans, so the ones who stay till the end of the game, you know, they get excited when a walk-on takes a shot. It's fun. And it's fun for the bench, because those guys get really fired up. You saw how fired up they were when Camerata got his point, first career point against Maine on Saturday. So I think that's good for the team. So just light moments in a game that otherwise is out of hand and, quite frankly, was a little boring towards the end. But we're going to kind of go through the game, analyze the games a little bit more by taking some of your questions. Phil is going to read the questions. Phil, what is our first question for the show today?
Yeah, so the questions we got from MU Scoop Twitter, you have failed us utterly this time. So these are all.
We're just too busy to tweet and beg for questions this week, so it's partly on us.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. You take that lump, Joe.
I will. I did not ask for scramble questions once this week. I apologize.
So from Scoop, our first question is from Loose Cannon, who
sounds
has a
swell guy.
Has a couple of dogs as an avatar, so you know, all whatever. Right. How do you measure the positive development these cupcake games have on our players and team as the season goes on?
Yeah, and I think that's a fair question because we kind of touched on it there and what we were just talking about. You know, it's nice to win these games and nice to win them convincingly, but you know, Marquette's numbers on KenPom are a little bit inflated right now when they got so many baskets and so many wide open looks and the opponents were missing so many shots. You know, Marquette's numbers on KenPom really pretty good right now. Top 50 in effective field goal percentage offensively and defensively. Well, I guess defensively they're 51, so close enough. I mean, their free throw rate is still great. Their two-point percentage is insane. It's top 17 as we're recording this. Their three-point percentage has gone way up to the point where they're basically middle of the road in the nation right now. And part of that, to their credit, is just better shot selection and some good, you know, just some good shooting. But to be fair, a lot of those shots are wide, wide open, and shots that are not going to be that wide open against Wisconsin or in Big East play. So to answer the question, it's good. It's okay to be happy with those wins and take positives out of it, as long as we take it with a little grain of salt, knowing that those shots are just not going to come that easy against significant opponents.
Well, and I do. I think I take a little different approach to it because I agree the shooting was much better. And one of the positives I think you probably take away from these kind of cupcake games that should carry forward is if you believe in the idea of momentum or believe in the idea of confidence in a game that you can, you know, you can play better if you're confident. These type of games give players confidence. You know, I think the shot selection, like you said, did improve. You know, Dwayne Wilson was not jacking threes. One of the things during the main game, he had, I think, 5 points the whole game and wasn't really looking to take shot. He was distributing. I remember one, and Marquette Basketball tweeted out the gif of it on Twitter where everyone got a touch, including Dwayne, who was the last touch. It had an open look at a three, passed it up to the corner for a better shot from Trey J, who hit the corner three. So I think shot selection is improving, but I also think, you know, some of the shots they took early in the season that weren't falling weren't bad shots. If from a position and a timing standpoint, they were bad shots in that they didn't go in. So you might take away from these games that, all right, these guys are thinking, yes, I can legitimately shoot the ball. You know, things haven't changed from when I used to be able to shoot the ball. So now seeing that basket go in the hoop will potentially springboard them forward where they will have that confidence to take that shot, hopefully not with 40 seconds left and a 2-point lead. But they'll be able to take the shot effectively when it is there.
Yeah, and another way to look at it, too, is it's kind of like a glorified practice, really. And, you know, you get confidence from good practices and say, all right, we had a good week of practice and we're going to have a good game this week. And you look, and I could take these games as kind of glorified practices where all the stuff that you work on in practice, you execute them at game speed, granted against guys who probably aren't even as talented as your second string that you're practicing against at the Al McGuire Center. But still, they are trying their hardest to stop you. They're trying the best they can, and you're executing and just getting more and more comfortable saying, all right, look, this is the game plan. This is what our offense is. This is what our defense is. We did some things right and we did a few things wrong, and the mistakes we made in this game didn't kill us. They probably will kill us against Wisconsin. So let's continue to work. And so we got confidence from what we did right, and now we're going to work on what we did wrong. So that's another way I look at it. Just a glorified, more intense practice against guys wearing a different color uniform and not plain white tees.
Right, absolutely. And you don't have the advantage I have, you know, in terms of going to the game. In Dallas, they won't fly you up for every game. But going to the game, what's that?
Someday,
yeah.
Working on that crack sidewalks travel budget.
Yeah, we got to get a big money donor. No, in watching these games, you know, watching the coaching staff's demeanor on the bench is something I can take the time. If I don't see every piece of action in these types of games, it's not a big deal. So watching the bench, watching how they coach, even in the main game, there was a time where the play got a little lackadaisical, and Wojo called a timeout and just kind of ripped the whole team a new one, saying, hey guys, you know, I know we're up 20 here, but like, let's get our act together and play like we mean it. And the players responded. I think that's, you know, we've continued to talk about, you know, can Wojo coach in game? How's that working out? And based on how they've responded so far, and little anecdotes like that, I think while he's still a work in progress in that regard, I definitely think there's improvement, and that's one of the positives I take away from these cupcake games is how effective he is in coaching some of these games as they go through.
And I think that's something you see from just about any half-decent coach in college basketball, and you see it from Wojo too, still taking coaching moments out of a 30-point game. You know, he's still up there coaching. He's still, you know, hollering at the guys whether the first string is in there or the second string is in there. You know, teachable moments, and say, look, what you just did out there is not acceptable. Even though it cut our lead from 30 to 28, it's still not acceptable, and we got to get better. And he saw on the video that Marquette Basketball posted after the main game, said, yeah, we got to get better defensively, and we got to get better on the glass. And I think those are two fair criticisms, just, you know, off the top, just looking at the box score from the games. And turnovers were a little high, I would say. 14-15 in the two games.
Yep.
You know, a little high. Maybe not ridiculous, but not a number you would want to see against a Big East team or Wisconsin.
Well, yeah, and listen, we're still dealing with freshmen. I mean, Tracy Carter has really come around. I mean, mm-hmm. he is starting to turn into the point guard. I would say not even the point guard we thought he was, turning into the point guard we hoped he was. You know, so I think that's a real, real positive. But there's still going to be those freshman moments, mm-hmm. That are going to lead to those sorts of things. And I also think one of the adjustments that Wojo has made is you're seeing a lot more of Dwayne Wilson kind of playing the backup to Tracy Carter, and Hanif Cheatham primarily, he's still bringing the ball up some, but primarily playing off the ball, and he has responded tremendously.
Yeah. I think that actually kind of goes into one of our scrambled questions as we're kind of going off script here, Phil, but there was a question about Dwayne and Juwan Johnson coming off the bench. Why don't we address that as one of our next questions?
Yeah, yeah. Nagin If and FJM had similar questions, but it was basically around, you know, what is the impact for Trey J and Dwayne coming off the bench? Is it positive? And then do we think with them, if they stay coming off the bench, do they have a shot at a six-man award in the Big East?
I'll address that second part quickly. I really don't, to be honest, not to be like snooty about it, I really don't care that much about a six-man of the year award in the Big East at this point in the season. If they play well, they'll have a shot at it. I'll just leave it at that. To answer the broader question, I think I do kind of like, even though you look at Dwayne and Juwan and say, well, these are guys who should be starting. I mean, they're kind of veteran guys compared to some of the rest of the guys on the team. But, you know, they are still getting plenty of minutes. I mean, Dwayne's playing 70% of the minutes. Juwan, just a little under half. And that's probably slanted by the game where he missed. After the passing of his grandfather. But that being said, I actually do like their roles because, you know, you definitely have to have Tracy Carter starting, okay, because you need the pure point guard out there as much as you can. That's why Tracy Carter's minutes keep going up and up, and I think they'll continue to do so. I do love Dwayne coming off the bench because he could fill in either role. If Tracy Carter needs to come out, Dwayne can go to the point guard spot. And if, but otherwise, Dwayne comes off the bench as that scorer off the bench, as a great spark plug. And Juwan is essentially the same thing, just more of a 2-3 as opposed to a combo point guard, shooting guard. And I think Juwan has been great coming off the bench. I think, as we've said before on the pod, Phil, Juwan, I think, is starting to slowly turn a corner as a player, really. I think he's becoming, you know, while I wouldn't necessarily call him a superstar at this point, I think he is a very dependable guard coming off the bench who can score for you. I think his shot selection has been very good. I mean, he's shooting almost 60% from the floor from two, and he's actually shot the ball well from three, surprisingly, lately. I don't know how long it's going to last, but he's shooting almost 37% from three.
Yeah, I think Juwan seems to respond coming off the bench. I don't know if it lets him get settled in from the kind of the adrenaline of the start of the game and just kind of ease his way in when he comes in into the game or what. But he's, you know, like you said, we've talked about it before. I'm seeing more and more of he plays quick, but he's playing in control, whereas previous years he was just playing quick.
Right.
So, I mean, he had a really great drive against Maine where he just kind of – he hesitated half a second and then took two big steps and kind of laid it up. And that's a move that I don't think we would have seen previously as he develops his patience. So, I think Dwayne coming off the bench is – I don't know that it's going to last that long because we'll see what happens with Hanif. I mean, I've got a huge man crush on Hanif. I think he's going to be just a tremendous player at Marquette for the years he's going to be here. Again, he's a freshman. Will he be able to stand up against, you know, some of the more veteran, experienced and talented teams in the Big East? Or do you see Dwayne maybe come back in as that starting off guard down the road? I don't know. But, I mean, really whether they're on the bench or off the bench at the start of the game doesn't really matter because Dwayne Wilson is still seeing – you know, the third most minutes on the team. He's got 29, a little over 29. Luke and Henry's got almost 30. Luke's got a little over 28, so I guess Dwayne's got the second most. I take that back. And Juwan Johnson's getting 20 minutes a game. So, I mean, they're getting minutes, whether they're starting or finishing, and I think that's a great use of the talent.
Yeah, and we've seen it before. I've mentioned this, I think, in the last podcast. Devontae Gardner, like, almost never started, but he played as many minutes in the middle as anyone, especially his last 2 years on the team. So, I mean, having one of your best players come off the bench isn't necessarily new to Marquette fans. And I think if Dwayne settles into this role that he's in, I think he can help the team win a lot of games. And I think maybe having that lineup out there, you know, maybe it is smart to maybe spread out your talent a little bit and have some of your stronger guys on your, your second line, I guess, you know, the first two or three guys off the bench. If maybe the game gets a little too fast for the freshman, you can take Cheatham out of there and take Carter out of there if you need to, or if Sandy Cohen needs a break or whatever. I think there are a lot of options because Dwayne and Juwan both kind of fit into several different roles between the two of them, and so I think it gives Wojo a lot of flexibility with his lineup with what he can do with those two guys coming off the bench. It's worked so far. Granted, it just about anything should work against Grambling, Maine, and Jackson State, but you know what he's done, it worked against LSU and Arizona State too, so that's a significant part. I mean, I think the real test will be will he stick to it in Madison?
Right, and one last point on this topic. I think the other thing is with the freshmen starting, you do get, regardless of the competition, you kind of do get the competition's best punch first. So you're kind of that's ensuring that these cupcakes give a lot of challenge to your freshmen to get them as spun up as you can in experience before you get to Big East. Because whether Hanif or Tracy start or don't start or whatever, it's clear they are going to have to have significant amounts and important minutes in Big East play. So you got to get them ready as rapidly as you can.
Yeah. Speaking of that, there was a question about minutes in the and who you should play in these blowout games. Let's go to one more scramble question. You kind of touched on it there, Phil.
Yeah, so Tamu Eagle has, which I think is Texas A&M University, actually. Weird.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
Part. Yeah, easy. I know it's down in your neck of the woods. So the question is, which is more important during cupcake games, getting guys like Helt and Sakar some run or giving the eight-man rotation time to practice playing together, assuming the game is well in hand?
You know, that's the thing. That's because I like both of those things to happen in this game. But I would say once the game is well in hand, I think it's more important to get guys like Helt and Sakaar a little bit of run, because heaven forbid you have injuries or something like that, or guys are just in games where they're in horrible foul trouble. You may need minutes from those guys. I mean, you may need Helt to come in and play 5 minutes against Villanova, which, you know, maybe you wouldn't normally do. Maybe you need help for 5 minutes against Wisconsin. Maybe that's not in the plan, but if fouls or injuries dictate it, that might be something you have to do. So I think it's great to get those guys out there and get them some run, because you may need them later. So, you know, I think when the game is, like, when the game is starting, when the game is just getting underway, I love seeing the main rotation guys out there building a big lead, like the way they execute, and, you know, fine-tuning some of the things that they want to do offensively and defensively. I think that cohesiveness is important. But I think it is great to get those guys on the bench a little bit of run.
I take a little different approach on it. I think if you've got a veteran team in a season, I think it's entirely reasonable to get those real young players some runs, A, see what you've got, and B, hopefully build up some experience that they can replace them. But with as inexperienced as this team is, I do think it's more important to get the players that are going to get the most minutes in Big East as much experience as possible, especially together. I think that was one of the downfalls in the early season, especially on the defensive end, was players just weren't used to talking to each other and being in the right positions. And I think, you know, we were having players sometimes playing out, you know, they couldn't even play defense at one position, and they were sometimes playing two or three different positions because of lineup mixes. I think as we go through this non-conference season, get the eight-man rotation, get them used to playing each other and set positions, and once we feel like they've got enough experience, then work in the younger guys. So I guess I would go a little bit of a hybrid approach where, you know, make sure we've got plenty of time for the eight-man rotation, and then leave some garbage time minutes for the next men up. Because you're right, you may need them down the road, but I think the ceiling's going to be higher, barring injury.
And I think, you know, during some of those games, you know, you get late in the game and it's really late. People are like, why hasn't Sakaar played? I mean, it's ridiculous he hasn't played. And I think maybe you see why to that point you were making. Maybe you do want to be really sure that Cheatham and Carter and Dwayne and that they all get it, that they are exactly where you want them to be before you start taking minutes away from them just to get some guys some run. Which, again, you may need Matt Helt and Sakaar Anum in Big East play, but odds are, if things go according to plan, you're going to need those other guys more. So I guess to answer that question, maybe, like, I think you made a great point. As young as this team is, it's probably more important to get Cheatham and Carter and those other guys as much, and Ellenson, all those guys as much run together as you can to make sure that off that first string is exactly what you want it to be. And then you can maybe have a little fun and bring in some of the backups. And, you know, watching Matt Helt, for example, I think the game is a little fast for him right now. I think he'll be a very good player at Marquette down the road. But I'd say right now he gets called for a lot of moving screens. That's like
that, the Grim Reaper?
Yeah.
2.0?
Yeah, maybe so. But, and like I said, I think Helt will be a fine player down the road because, you know, basically, you know, look at the way the roster is. He's going to be the guy in the middle by the time he's a junior, and I think he will see significant minutes next year as well. But maybe a little fast for him right now. But, again, I think he'll be ready if he is called upon to, you know, give you 5 minutes if you need him in a big game. But so that's why I think it's nice to get him some minutes. But you're probably not going to need that much from a guy like him this year. So I would lean towards the other after talking it out, that getting those first stringers a little more.
Right. I mean, I guess the way I look at it is if Fisher goes down for significant minutes such that you have to play Helt for a lot of minutes, I don't know that getting Helt 10 minutes instead of, you know, 5 minutes in during a cupcake game is really going to make a difference in the Big East.
Yeah, again, it's almost like a glorified practice, and yep. I'm sure Helt gets plenty of run in practice.
So you would hope Luke Fisher's dragging his butt up and down the court.
Yeah, it's not like he never touches a basketball. If he doesn't play against Maine, it's not like he doesn't touch a basketball. So
right.
I'm not that worried about him. All right, let's just get one more scramble question out of here quickly before we start our hatred on the rodents from Madison.
Okay, this one from MU Grad 2006. So
that's
probably
a nice handle.
Yeah, it's solid. It's topical and to the point. Mm-hmm. So here's the question. Am I crazy, perhaps? Or yes. Does Wojo seem to be letting this team try to play their way through bad stretches more often than not? Seems to me many times when the opponent goes on a run where you'd expect a timeout, he lets them play on.
Honestly, I'm not sure I've noticed that much. And maybe if he did against Grambling in Maine, it's because it was Grambling in Maine, and he's not worried about losing the game necessarily. And I think maybe he would like to see the team be able to battle through some stuff, but I'm trying to think of a point in, like, say, the LSU or Arizona State game where that happened, where the team was just getting run off the floor.
I don't know how much of it is he's not taking a timeout as the rules have changed. I mean, they have one less timeout, so coaches
and the players have to call it.
Yeah, and players have to call it. So you're not, unless, you know, he's really serious about getting a timeout and shutting things down for a teachable moment or to get things going. I don't think he's really in a rush to do that. Now, where I do think he does, and I saw it a couple of times even in the main game on Saturday, he will put players back in after a real quick break when he thinks maybe something hasn't gone right on the court that he wants to get. Like he put Tracy Carter back in pretty quick after a couple, I think Maine went on like a 7-0 run, even though they were still down 20 or 25. Went on a 7-0 run, and Carter came right back into the game real quick. So I think Wojo's quick to replace players, just maybe not take timeouts.
Yeah, maybe so. And now that the question has been asked, I'm probably going to watch it a little more
against
San Jose State on Tuesday. And then the thing is, I don't think he's going to let them play through too much agony against Wisconsin.
I don't think he can.
If things are getting out of control, I mean, you got to stop the bleeding as quickly as you possibly can before you get run out of the gym in Madison. But speaking of that, I think I'm ready to pour another glass of Haterade, Phil.
I am awfully thirsty right now for such things.
And we are going to talk about the disgusting rodents in Madison and the glory that is Badger Hate Week. Of course, Anonymous Eagle is kind of the ringleader for Badger Hate Week, and I do enjoy their content very much. Please keep an eye on them and everything they do this week because it is usually quite hilarious. You know, Phil, over the summer we thought this might actually be Marquette's last go-round against Bo Ryan. When he announced his retirement. But just like a villain in your favorite horror flick, he is apparently back from the dead. And, you know, Bo is suspected to be a vampire.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, he's already undead, isn't he?
Yes, so he may never die anyway. But apparently he's having some conflict, shall we say, with King Barry over there in Madison. And maybe I think it probably stems from Bo wants his top assistant to replace him, and I don't know if Barry's all that big on that idea. And yada, 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 but this may or may not be our last go-around at Bo. But it might be, so we better take our best shot.
Right, well, and TNT and TBS are showing how the Grinch stole Christmas, so clearly they're in on Badger Hate Week.
Well, that's good, and I thought Bo was great in that film.
Yeah, best acting.
I thought he did great.
Other than the way he acts around the refs, that was his best film.
Yeah, I mean, the Final Four was also great acting, where he acted like there were no fouls being called.
The post-game conference in which he acted stunned that one-and-done players were a thing and how they were above it, but, you know.
And he acted like there was a conspiracy theory against, you know, Wisconsin winning the national title, which I would be all for.
Listen, if there was such a thing, I would know about it because I'd be participating in it.
That would be a Scotty pact I could get on board with, any kind of pact to prevent them from winning a national title. But all kidding aside, Phil, but we're going to keep kidding anyway, this is a very important game for Marquette for so many reasons. Obviously, it's a rivalry. For that reason, it's important for recruiting. It's important for national recognition. And, of course, you know, I know it's way premature to talk about tournament resumes and all that stuff like that, but if you have those goals, and this team certainly does, they haven't given up on this season despite a couple early season losses, this is the first step towards a long road that does end in getting to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, for all of those reasons, this is a must-win, that mm-hmm. we have to have this win because without it, there is nothing. I mean, LSU has struggled of late. They even lost to College of Charleston.
Yeah, thanks, LSU.
Nice job, Ben Simmons. Even though he had 40 points or something ridiculous like that. Yeah. You know, they have to have this win to to salvage some sort of significance out of the non-conference. Otherwise, they're just really going to have to go nuts in the conference season. Which
basically, I look at it this way. If you can beat Wisconsin, and assuming you win the rest of the bye games, wins over LSU, Arizona State, and Wisconsin basically cancel out losses to Belmont and Iowa. I still don't think that means you have a great resume, but I think you're just right middle of the road. You're
well, I think right it's enough the that the committee goes, okay, that's fine, good enough. Let's look at the conference season, and if they've been...
Yes, now prove something in Big East play. Right,
and if they've been winning in the Big East, especially in the months of February and March, I think we'll be fine. If we lose to Wisconsin, it makes it much harder for the committee to look past any flaws.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you've got to be amazing in the Big East for them to forgive that. I mean, don't come to the committee with a 9-3 conference record with all those wins against Cupcake and expect the committee to stand and applaud. They're just not going to.
Right. Well, but, and the most significant reason for why Marquette needs to win this game is there is a ton on the line for me in this game. A ton.
Yes, some more than others. Tell them about the very important wager you have.
Yes.
Going, Phil.
So. Frequent listeners to the pod know that the wife character in my household is a rodent fan.
You mean that lovingly?
Lovingly.
I love how you threw in fan there at the end just as I interrupted you. That was important.
Yeah,
you
well,
said rodent fan.
You know, you never know when she's listening. Yes. But no, it comes by it honestly. Grew up in Wisconsin and graduated with 2 degrees from Wisconsin, so I can understand her bad taste. It happens.
Yep.
But as we've discussed in the pod, we now have a young son who, while advanced in many ways, is still unable to dress himself at 3 weeks old. Mm. So this year he will be, I believe, dress neutral, but we have a wager. Whoever's team wins this game gets to dress said child for next year's game, which will be in the Bradley Center, and I really, really, really don't want to bring a red-wearing child into the Bradley Center next year.
So basically, you are calling for a cause here to stop child abuse.
Correct.
And stop raising Badger fans.
Correct. This is very important. We need to, like, a hashtag no red for Owen, or hashtag save my son, something.
Save Owen.
Save Owen. We need the people behind this, and we need the team to really win. If they could rally around my son, that would be fine with me.
There's a lot on the line for Phil in this game, so keep that in mind. Marquette basketball, basically Phil's life is going to be greatly altered depending on the outcome of this game. You know, Phil, KenPom does not give Marquette much of a shot in this one, and I can't say they're wrong about that, but Marquette's percentage chance of winning this game is 18%. Which is just slightly higher than what Jackson State had against Marquette. I believe Jackson State had a 14% chance of beating Marquette.
Yes.
Marquette is a huge underdog in this one. KenPom has them as a 9-point dog, which, you know, maybe that's fair. I mean, Wisconsin is still, I mean, let's be honest, they're a fine basketball team. Maybe they're not Final Four quality like they were a year ago. They've taken a step back, and that's going to happen when you lose guys to the NBA and seniors graduate and yada, yada. Every team goes through that. But, I mean, they have that stinker of a loss to Western Illinois. That was a bad one. They did lose to Georgetown. By the way, great win by Georgetown against Syracuse. Not to get off topic or anything, but I love that.
Go Big East.
Yes, go Big East, indeed. Just got by VCU with the buzzer, and then they lost to Oklahoma, who honestly could be one of the better teams in the country, so there's no shame in losing to Oklahoma. As much as I would love to hate on them, I mean, Oklahoma's dang good. But so, again, this is not the impossible task that was facing last year's team, but it is still a very significant task going to Madison and trying to match up with these guys who you know are going to execute and you know, probably get some fouls going their way. That's the way it goes on the road in college hoops.
Well, I think one of the things that is nice is if you look at Marquette, they've learned. I mean, they're ninth in the country in free throws given. So they're playing without fouling, which is good, especially against a Wisconsin team. I KenPom looks at it from a statistical standpoint. I think Wisconsin, like you said, they're not the Final Four team. I think they've certainly got some flaws that they haven't had previous. Koenig really is the only reliable guard, I think, or perimeter player. I don't think they're as dangerous from three, which has been historically one of our weaknesses. So I think
shockingly, they are shooting a lower percent from three than Marquette right now.
You know, so that can always turn around at some point in time.
Sure.
But
I mean, they're 31.7 as we're recording this, and Marquette is 33.1. So it's not like it's a gigantic difference.
Right. But it's certainly low from a historic perspective for Wisconsin.
Yes. I mean, obviously, normally they're just bombs away, and they just make everything.
Right. So I think, I mean, it's going to be interesting matchups. I think you'll see Nigel Hayes and Henry Ellenson kind of going against each other, and you know, you'll probably see Hanif on Koenig or Tracy Carter even, or maybe even Sandy Cohen, because, you know, Wojo's been really singing his praises and saying Wojo is kind of in the, they're not comparable yet, but is it kind of in the Jimmy Butler role of, we put him on whoever their best player is, we put Sandy Cohen on there on them and defend him. So it'll be, I wouldn't give it 18%. I don't know that I'm ready to call the upset, but I'm certainly thinking Marquette can go in and be competitive.
I absolutely expect Marquette to be competitive. I wouldn't say anything else on a Marquette.
Well, that's true.
Podcast.
Yeah, we would be
Let's
run
be
out
honest.
With pitchforks.
You know, the San Jose State game is a nice one last nice opportunity to just fine-tune some things. Maybe you're going to see the starters a little bit more than you would, say, against that you did against Grambling and Maine if things aren't going exactly perfect. Maybe, again, you'll see those guys a lot more just to make sure everything is completely ready for Wisconsin. But, I mean, to be honest, I do love some of the things they've been doing. I mean, as much as they've been going to Fisher, I think Fisher's been great. I think he's going to have to be great in Madison for Marquette to win. I think he's got to be the go-to guy. And then Ellenson's got to support him. I think if Marquette's going to win in Madison, it's going to have to be big games from the guys inside because, again, Marquette is so good at the rim. Again, top 20 in the country in two-point percentage, and a lot of that is just right at the rim. It's Fisher dunks. It's Dwayne Wilson driving to the basket. It's Ellenson mid-range game. Those are the things that I think are going to make a difference in Madison is just continue the patience, and I think they've been very good about that, to be honest with you. As frustrating as it was early on, I think they've been very good about making a conscious effort to get into the paint and try to get in the paint first, and if that leads to a wide-open three-point shot, great. Take it, and the three-point percentage has gone up.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I think the key you mentioned was patience. They have got to not get carried away, not get rushed, not just start jacking up shots like we saw a little bit in the Iowa game where they just settled for the first decent look they can get. If they work their offense, I think they've got a really strong chance to be successful.
Yeah, so like my worst nightmare for this game is reverting to old habits in the heat of the battle. Because if you're, you know, in the Kohl Center, all that red, all those fans yelling at you, and suddenly, you know, you're down 8 points, and like, oh man, we got to catch up. Let's fire a three. Oh, dang it, I missed that one. All right, now we're down 10. I got to fire up another three. And then if those bad habits come back, then it spirals out of control, and the turnovers become an issue. Because the turnovers have still been, you know, been an issue against everyone. That really hasn't hurt them against Grambling and Maine, but that'll kill you against Wisconsin. So I am scared of old habits, but I am confident right now from what I've seen that even if it does get a little ugly early, if they get down 10 points, that they are still going to settle in and say, look, let's just get it. We can't get 10 points in one trip. Let's just get two, and let's just go into Luke Fisher and get that. I guess my other nightmare from the game would be foul trouble and if Fisher hardly plays.
Yeah, I think Fisher or Ellenson getting into foul trouble is would be a death knell, I think, but we'll see.
Yeah, so as far as my prediction for the game?
Pain?
Of course, pain. Of course I think Marquette's going to win. What else would I say on this podcast? I think they're going to play their best game of the year, and I think they're going to execute, and I think they're going to go out there, and I think they shock some people. So, yeah, that's what you say on a Marquette basketball podcast.
Do you have a final score?
Yeah, let's go 72-69. Good guys.
Okay. I like it. Well, I last season, you know, Marquette was considerably less talented than Wisconsin was, and they played them tight. Granted, that was in the Bradley Center. So I think Wojo can coach him up. He knows the significance of this rivalry. We've got a lot of Wisconsin, half the roster are Wisconsin players, Wisconsin-born players. So I think they'll all be up and ready to go. I think it actually, you know, I think Marquette's offense really goes nuts. And while maybe not quite as scoring high as you have, I would say for a Wisconsin game, it ends up something like 65-57 Marquette.
Yeah. We're giving you what you want to hear. that Marquette is going to go to Madison and beat Wisconsin. You know, all kidding aside, it's going to be a huge challenge, and you know, we're going to see how truly far they've come since Brooklyn. And they're doing the right things. They've tried, you know, they're still doing the plain white tees as a superstition, but I think their attitude is better. I think their execution is better. But that's going to be the ultimate test to see if this team is going to take a gigantic leap forward and continue down a path that could lead to a nice season, which would, again, the ultimate goal until it is completely out of reach is the NCAA tournament.
Right. Well, plus they have a cause. No red. Hashtag no red for Owen.
Hashtag save Owen.
Save
whatever,
Owen.
Whatever catches on and the kids like better. We're down for anything.
Yep.
That's the most important thing.
Agreed.
All right. So, again, as always, we appreciate you guys listening to us here on Scrambled Eggs. Pour your Haterade and drink it all. And please check us out on Crack Sidewalks all week. And, of course, check out Anonymous Eagle and all their hilarious content for Badger Hate Week. We love hearing from you. You can tweet us at I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team page. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com, which is where we post the podcasts. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page where we post us as well. And, of course, we're on iTunes. Phil, I am hoping the best for Owen.
Yes, me too.
No red for Owen.
Foundational learning is important. He needs to learn that red is not a good color.
He needs to live in a world where Marquette is consistently better than Wisconsin, and it starts on Saturday.
Haterade.
Have a great week, everybody. Until then, seashells and balloons, Badgers suck.
Boo.